This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Brian Naylor in Washington. Now, a discussion about a controversial court ruling that struck down several government rules on campaign fundraising. If you'd like to join in the conversation, call us at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. A federal judge has ruled that a set of government campaign finance rules run contrary to Congress's efforts to reform campaign fundraising. The decision was handed down over the weekend by U.S. District Judge Colleen Kollar-Kotelly, and it could have implications for the so-called 527 groups that are playing a big role in this election cycle. The decision also adds fuel to the growing call for major reform at the Federal Elections Commission. What does this mean for the last 6 weeks of the presidential election? Give us a call at 1-800-989-TALK. NPR's Power, Money, and Influence correspondent, Peter Overby, joins us now to explain the ruling and take your calls. Thanks for joining us, Peter.
Hi, Brian.
So what exactly did Judge Kollar-Kotelly say in her ruling?
Well, she looked at 19 regulations that the FEC had adopted to enforce the McCain-Feingold law. McCain-Feingold makes some big changes in the way political money moves in this country at the federal level. And the lawsuit alleged that the regulations watered it down, that they undermined it. She basically agreed with the lawsuit, with the plaintiffs, on 15 of the 19 regulations. She sent them back to the FEC.
So Congress passed McCain-Feingold, and then it was up to this agency, the FEC, to actually come up with the rules and regulations that would implement this new law. And she's saying that these rules and regulations were contrary to what the law was.
Undermining the law, creating immense loopholes, a phrase she used. Her language was very strong. The action that she took actually was not quite as strong as the language that she used to take it. She could have thrown out the regulations, but 6 weeks before the election, she didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the lawsuit was brought by two members of Congress, Marty Meehan and Christopher Shays.
That's right. They were the House sponsors of the bill. And Getzlaw Arcane here, they had standing, or they had the financing available through the House of Representatives to bring the lawsuit in a way that John McCain and Russell Feingold, the Senate sponsors, did not. So Shays and Meehan's names are on the lawsuit. McCain and Feingold filed friend of the court briefs.
But clearly they were among the,
yes,
the major backers of the campaign finance law in Congress. What didn't they like about what the FEC did to their law?
Oh, where to start?
well, we've got a couple of minutes here.
Yeah, so. They were outraged. The sponsors and the reform groups that have that pushed the bill through Congress have been after the FEC since the beginning of 2003, when the FEC started writing the regs. All along the way, there have been battles where the reformers said, "You're watering down the bill. You're undermining what we're trying to do. We didn't say what you say we said." It's just been a rip-roaring battle in the regulatory world that finally wound up in court, and this is the point that it brings us to now.
And it's much broader than just the regulatory world. We're talking about the regulations that are governing how this current campaign is being conducted. What is this ruling going to do now in the remaining weeks before November 2nd?
That's a question that is being hotly debated even as we speak by campaign finance lawyers around Washington and around the rest of the country. Probably it's not going to make any difference in this election cycle. There's not enough time remaining. The fact that she sent the regulations back to the FEC instead of simply throwing them out, she could have enjoined the FEC from using these regulations to enforce anything, and she did not do that. So what it probably means is that, for instance, the 527 committees that everyone's talking about these days can keep on doing what they're doing through this election and have a good legal argument if they get in trouble afterwards that they were that they were operating in good faith under the rules as they knew them.
Okay. If you've ever, we'd like to encourage you to call in and join this discussion. If you've ever given money to a presidential candidate, if you'd like to know where that money goes, give us a call at 800-989-TALK, or you can email us at totn@npr.org. I'm just wondering, the big precepts of the campaign finance law, the McCain-Feingold law, have not been changed by this.
No. The authors of the law would say the big precepts are being upheld by this decision. To give you one example of the big precept and how it gets down into the nitty-gritty so quickly, the law says that federal candidates and office holders can't raise or spend soft money, unregulated money. So there's a question about, if they go to speak before a group that raises soft money, can they speak at a soft money fundraiser? And the way the FEC parsed that, it said that a member of Congress, for instance, could go to one of these events, a soft money fundraiser, and as long as the member didn't say, "So, my friends, give soft money to this group," then the member of Congress was on the right side of the law. That's one of the things that that made the reform people see red. It's one of the things that led to the lawsuit.
Let's go to a caller now. Bob is on the line from Reno, Nevada. Thanks for calling us on Talk of the Nation.
Yes, my name's Bob, and I think you guys have probably answered this question, but I'm going to ask it again anyway.
Well, that's okay.
With the 527s, or with any of this campaign financing, I thought the idea was transparency. If we knew where the money came from, then we would know who was trying to influence who, and other than that, it's a violation of the First Amendment, freedom of speech, to say you can't and you can, and who's to be the arbiter other than a judge, and he's sworn to follow the Constitution, hopefully. So I don't understand what the big problem with the 527s is, if there's transparency in the way the money is, gathered and spent and whatnot.
Peter Overby, can you explain?
Yeah, the Supreme Court took a more complicated view of it than the one you just laid out. The court says that the government has an interest in restricting money in politics when it comes to questions of corruption or the appearance of corruption. So the closer the money gets to actual candidates, the more it's regulated. For instance, you can't give an unlimited amount of money to a presidential candidate.
That's correct.
In fact, right now, you can't give any money to a presidential candidate at all if it's John Kerry or President Bush, because they are taking public funds, and under the law, when they do that in the fall campaign, they can't take any private money. So that's about as regulated as you can get.
Right.
The farther away from the candidates you get, the looser the rules get.
But you can still send money to the DNC. I do.
Yeah, but you can't send an unlimited amount to the DNC anymore.
Oh, it's $200, I think, isn't it?
No, it's quite a bit higher than that. It's $25,000.
Oh, well.
So they'll be glad to hear from you again.
Don't worry about me.
Okay.
All right, Bob. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you, sir.
And now we'd like to turn to Irene. Irene in Lansing, Michigan. Thanks for calling us.
Yes, hi. I was wondering how come the loopholes couldn't have been tightened up further than they ultimately were, and also that is it possible to get online and find out who's giving to these 527 groups?
What loopholes are you talking about?
The fact that they're allowed to set up these groups like SWIFT, Vote, Veterans for Truth, and things like that, and don't we have any option towards finding out who these people are now and exposing them before the campaign finance reports show up?
Peter, before you answer, just let me remind our listeners that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Okay. The 527 donors get disclosed in a couple different ways, and there are private websites where you can see this, and you can also see it at the IRS website, although the IRS website, to my mind, is somewhat clunkier than the others. OpenSecrets.org is a place to go. The Center for Public Integrity, publicintegrity.org. And you can see the donors there.
How current is that?
It's as current as the last report, and that gets into kind of a complicated situation once again, where the 527s file quarterly with the IRS, but when they make television buys, they have to file with the Federal Election Commission. So those reports happen a lot more often.
Oh, that's great.
All right.
Thank you for the information.
Sure.
Thank you, Irene, for calling us. The number is 1-800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And speaking of which, we have an email question from Patrick Sullivan in New York City. He writes, where will money go if I give money now? It seems that the parties are still soliciting funds, even though the candidates themselves are not. Peter, I think you partially addressed that earlier.
Yeah. The party committees are always happy to get your money. The way they're using it now, there's a couple of different ways. The Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee can spend about $16 million each in coordinated activities with the candidate committees. So, you know, they can be running ads and doing ground war stuff to support John Kerry and President Bush. They can also, and the Democrats have already done this pretty extensively, they can run independent expenditure operations where they take any amount of money. They still get limited contributions, but they can take any amount of those regulated contributions and spend them on anything they want as long as they don't coordinate it with the candidate. So there's an operation at the DNC that is sort of set up away from everything else, you know, firewalls. So most of the DNC doesn't know what the independent expenditure group is doing until it hits the airwaves.
All right. Let's bring in James here from Washington, D.C. with your question. Thanks for calling, James.
Oh, thank you for having the show. Two questions. The first one is, if the 527 committees are eventually regulated out of politics, where will that money go? And second, unless you change the structure of the FEC, aren't we going to have the same problem over and over again? I mean, they'll just pass the same regulations, just maybe slightly watered down, won't they?
Peter, where would the money go if the 527s are ever legislated out of existence?
Well, probably what would happen to the 527s is some of them would become regulated political committees, and then they couldn't take contributions of more than $5,000 each. But some of them could become 501c4s, which are advocacy organizations, where they couldn't, their major purpose could not be campaign politics. And there are a lot of thin lines here between what is advocating for a candidate and what's advocating for an issue. It's the real gray area of campaign money right now.
And I guess all of this leads to the second part of James's question, and that is the FEC. FEC threat or menace? There have been lots of calls for reform in the agency. Does this ruling, do you think, lend any weight to those arguments?
It probably adds ammunition to those arguments. McCain, Feingold, Shays, Meehan, the reform groups all think that the FEC ought to be drastically overhauled. They think that instead of three Republican commissioners and three Democratic commissioners, a recipe for deadlock, there ought to be one administrator who's appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate, and then a system of administrative law judges to hear cases, roughly like labor law is handled.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Peter. Peter Overby is NPR's Power, Money, and Influence correspondent. He joined us today from Studio 3A here in Washington. Thanks again.